you go to the iTunes store and you search podcast for Talk to Contact, you're the number 4 podcast. If you search Minnesota Twins, we're the number 3 podcast. The old Talking Twins is hanging out number 1.
Brothers from the Twin Cities, Twins Baseball Talk to Contact. Twin Brothers from the Twin Cities, Twins Baseball Talk to Contact. Talk to Contact.
Welcome to episode 129 of the Talk to Contact podcast. I'm your host, Paul Pleiss, at Baseball Pirate on the Twitter machine. Joined by my twin brother, Eric Pleiss, here to talk to contact about these Minnesota Twins. Eric, welcome back.
Paul, you're the one that's welcome back.
Well,
you were last on the show when?
Last week.
No. You're on the show last week?
2 weeks ago, maybe. Who knows? Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you were on the home opener show. That was your last one. Yeah, so I went to 0 Twins games so far on this. They're in the midst of this 11-game homestand, and I went to 0 games so far. But the White Sox are in town this weekend, so I'm going out to the Saturday game. And then I imagine I'll try and pick up some cheap seats like next Tuesday night, because I got nothing going on. So I haven't seen some baseball for a while, but the Twins' defense has been frustratingly bad. I don't know, you maybe don't remember this, put it out of your mind. One of these winter shows, we had a question from, I think it was from Bill, and he said, like, how many runs do you think the Twins' defense has cost them this year?
Yeah, how many?
Over the last 3 years or something.
Yep. Well, yeah, he was asking us to guess how much it will cost them in this upcoming season. And I think we made some wagers in runs per game. And I think we settled on like half a run a game, which maybe I think we've seen that. I don't know. I haven't looked at any defensive stats, but I think that might be fairly accurate.
I think it could be worse than that. And, you know, there's the Twins are committing some errors, so don't get me wrong there, but there's a lot of very generous scoring plays by the official scorer. You know, Arcia, it seems like every time he's playing the outfield, he misplays some ball. Torrey Hunter, you know, is not getting to balls that you would expect even an average left fielder, you know, or right fielder to get to. And so there's missed plays. Center field defense has been probably the best of the outfield, but Schaefer and Robinson, I mean, they're nothing special out there. And considering that they're not hitting at all, you know, they're nothing. Santana has been pretty bad defensively. I think I saw numbers. He's been one of the worst shortstops defensively in the league so far. Some of that's throwing, some of that's not getting to balls. And every once in a while, he gets to a ball and makes a spectacular play. But I think, you know, more often than not, he's missing balls a lot of times that, you know, average fielders would get to. So I don't know. Trevor Plouffe has been pretty good. Joe Mauer's been all right. Brian Dozier, you know, we've talked to death about him in the past. You know, if he's average defensively, you know, he's going to make some flashy plays here and there. He's got good range when he's going to his right or when he's going away. Moving to his left, not so good. But, you know, this defense, and then you throw in catching. And when your catchers are Kurt Suzuki and then Chris Herman, you know, you're not getting a defensive catcher from either of those guys. And so you're losing, you know, fractions of a run. And for whatever value you want to give to pitch framing there, you're losing fractions of a run because neither of those guys are particularly well suited for picking up extra strikes there. So I don't know. It seems like this team is giving teams extra outs, giving them extra runs, booting balls, you know, just missing throws, cutoff men, things like that. It feels very sloppy. And I don't know if that's a thing, you know, with the guys they have there, or whether it's, you know, maybe Paul Mahler hasn't, you know, firmed up and got the guys always thinking about this. Maybe it's, you know, they got a bunch of guys that aren't good at defense.
I think that's, I was about to go there. I was about to say, maybe it's just that these guys aren't good at defense. I mean, Jordan Schaefer last year provided a spark offensively very unexpectedly, but he's looked lost out there in center field this year. I think depending on what kind of metrics you look at so far in the season, but he's been worth about an average of minus five runs so far into the season. He leads the team in worst defense, except on Fangraphs, where Danny Santana has somehow been worth negative six runs. And I think we've talked about that before. He looks terrible moving to his left up to the middle of the field. He looks almost as bad moving to his right, trying to get to the hole between second and third. I mean, and he's airmailed a couple of throws. I mean, Danny Santana just looks terrible. He started to hit just a little bit the last couple of days, had a nice bunt hit yesterday. But for the most part, he's been a terribly ineffective leadoff hitter. I don't think he's yet to take a walk on the season to go with a whole bunch of strikeouts. And couple that with terrible defense at shortstop, and you got a guy that just looks lost at the major league level.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and certainly a pitching staff that puts the balls in play as much as the Twins have. Again, they're last in the league in strikeouts. I think last in the league from starters and relievers. So it's not like they've got a couple pieces. You know, a lot of guys not getting strikeouts. So the ball is getting put in play a lot. And then your defense, which is one of your biggest weaknesses, is exposed even more. So some of these guys are getting ground balls. They're getting, you know, soft liners and fly balls that aren't being converted into outs. And then all of a sudden, because they're not counted as errors by the official scorer, now you've got a team, you know, where the ERA could be inflated. You know, I mean, if they're giving up an extra run a game, and maybe it's not that bad, they're rated as the fourth worst overall defense by Fangraphs, you know, orders of magnitude worse than the Royals and the Orioles, who are rated up at the top. You know, so they may be giving away a run a game, even compared to an average team, and certainly compared to very good teams, they're giving away a lot more than that.
And that run, that half a run or run that they're giving away, looks even worse because a team that's terrible defensively, and we're also looking at a team that I think is last in the American League in runs scored going in to yesterday's game. So they're not scoring runs, they're giving runs away. Torii Hunter looks stiff out in right field, and I don't know if fans can really appreciate how bad he looks out there, because for the most part, he makes a lot of safe plays, save for a throw that he airmailed to nowhere a few games ago. But he's not getting to ball. So it doesn't always look like he's terrible out there. It's not like Jordan Schaefer, who's just looked lost on a bunch of his routes. But Torii just can't get to those balls anymore. His range is just so decreased, and he has to play so far back to keep balls from going over his head that he just can't get to anything in front of him. And it's awful. I mean, Torii Hunter, Jordan Schaefer, and Oswaldo Arcia have all cost this team at least three runs defensively. I mean, we're looking at, I think, cumulatively off of Fangraphs, the three of them have combined for negative 13 runs so far this season. That's pretty bad. That's just the outfield.
Yeah, and what are we? We're 20 games into the season, so I mean, yeah, you're easily to that run a game mark there. So you know, it can't continue to be this bad. I think the Twins are getting to a spot, Paul, and jump in if you agree with this, where they're going to start looking to make changes. We've already seen, you know, Arcia has been on the pine. Vargas rode the bench for 3 days. And Vargas doesn't play defense, but these guys that aren't performing, Paul Molitor is starting to say, well, we need to try something different, whether it's, you know, putting an outfield of Schaefer and Robinson out there and then using, you know, Escobar and Nunez in the outfield and just trying to find other guys to give a little spark here. But it could be a situation where Danny Santana loses his grip on that starting spot as a shortstop before too long. And if Santana loses his spot there, I mean, I don't think that they would necessarily move him back to center. Maybe he becomes your utility infielder. Maybe then you get rid of Nunez, or Nunez, who has been hitting well early on, probably, I was talking with Brandon Warren on Twitter, probably buys him a little bit of extra time. I mean, he's got a useless roster spot, but he probably sticks around for a little while. So, you know, I don't know. I think you're going to see Molitor starting to make some roster moves. Some guys are going to play their way onto this team from the minor leagues, and there's some guys playing their way off. And Arcia, I think, is a guy that could be in danger of losing his grip on a starting position. You know, as bad as his defense has been, he's essentially proving himself to be what we have talked about him being before, which is just a designated hitter. And essentially, Vargas and Arcia are awful fielders who, you know, maybe could play first base, but are best suited just to hit the ball. And then Josmi Opinto, who's down in AAA, he's hitting the ball very well, and he's really best suited as a DH. He could come up and be your once-a-week catcher and certainly provide more of a spark off the bench or more of a pinch hitter than Chris Herrmann could do. So I think there's some moves that this team can make to get better. You know, and Paul, we kind of mentioned this in an email we exchanged back and forth with the outfield defense. You know, Rosario and especially Aaron Hicks are doing very well in AAA right now. And if the defense continues to be this big of a concern, those guys are a phone call and a plane ride away. And I think within the next couple of weeks, we're going to see some moves, and not just these moves that are being facilitated by all these injuries that we're seemingly having with the pitching staff and some knees and things like that going on with some of our outfielders.
Yeah, and it's tough because the current roster construction is really makes it difficult right now. You've got Eduardo Nunez, who in extremely limited playing time continues to get hit after hit and somehow extending his ability to stay on the roster. I can't tell you how often I don't want him to be on the roster. I see him come up to bat and it makes me depressed. And he's still, for somehow in this limited action, he just keeps getting hits. I mean, he has, what, like 20, 25 maybe plate appearances? And he's probably hitting like 400. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's doing it even with a little bunch of pop. He's got a bunch of doubles so far. And so it's going to make it harder and harder for the Twins to cut him and bring up the help that they need. I mean, I don't know who you send down at this point offensively, because I think that you hope that some of these guys turn it around. Do you send down Jordan Schaefer and bring up Aaron Hicks? Is that a move that needs to happen sooner than later? You know, or would you rather have Schaefer on the bench than Nunez? Provides a little bit of speed off of the bench, and you send Nunez down? I mean, I don't know. If you could make two roster changes for this offense, what changes would you make?
I think the first thing that I would do is I would probably... you know, Schaefer or Robinson, I don't know. I'd probably get rid of one of those guys. I maybe like Robinson a little bit more than Schaefer. Schaefer has been with the team a little bit longer, but they're pretty interchangeable if you ask me. And then I'd bring up Aaron Hicks and get him up there. I mean, even in his disappointing stints with the Twins the last couple of years, at least he's getting on base. He's drawing walks. He doesn't have the power, and he hasn't really rounded into that first-class hitter that maybe his ceiling could say. But he's done pretty well at AAA this year, and he showed some flashes of it last year. He seems to have a better handle on himself. So he can make an upgrade, I think, right away over Robinson and Schaefer. And then the other thing that I would do is I would just find a way to get Josmi Opinto onto the bench. And I probably get rid of Herrmann as a result, because I don't think that he really adds anything coming off the bench. I mean, he has some positional flexibility, but a guy that can play first base, corner outfield, and catch a little bit doesn't really help this team. I mean, Trevor Plouffe can play first in the corners, and you have other guys. You have Vargas that can play first base. You got Escobar that can play every position, it seems like, on the diamond, and he's the emergency catcher. So give me a guy that can offer you something off the bench if you need it. And that's where maybe I like Pinto a little bit more than Herrmann. And I mean, certainly Nunez, but like I said, I don't think he's going anywhere just yet. So offensively, I think they can make some moves. Herrmann and then one of your center fielders, I think, can go for for upgrades that can be right there from AAA. I think that could go a long way. I don't know how much of a change you make in the starting lineup, though, right? I mean, you put Hicks in there, he probably bats eighth or ninth, depending on what Molitor is doing with Santana, and Santana's turned it on a little bit here in the last couple of games, whether he's hitting, you know, first or eighth or ninth or wherever. So you're putting a guy at the back of the lineup and then giving yourself a bench bat. That doesn't change things drastically, but I think it makes your team a little more cohesive. And we talked about this last week with Nygaard. You know, you want to have some guys in your bench that have some specialty roles. They don't have to do everything great, but they need to do one thing better than anyone else on the bench. And that's what a little bit more of a specialized bench, I think, could benefit this team. You know, but we'll see it. They might be ended up going with some extra pitchers here. So Brian Dunsing, it sounds like, is going to come off the disabled list here, maybe as early as Saturday. And then Nolasco is I think, slated to start on Saturday. And they're going to move Malone to the bullpen. And so that means you got to resolve what's going on with Hughes. And then you got to figure out, you know, when Nolasco comes up, who goes down? And when Dunsing comes back onto this team, who do you get rid of? So there's going to be some moving around here. Malone right now is going to be the long man in the bullpen, but that's short term. And that's just coming out tonight before we started this podcast. So I don't know what ultimately shakes down there. And then with Fien going on the disabled list, we're getting our old buddy back, Paul. Michael Tonkin, he of the fabulous, fabulous minor league mustache. And sad news report is his mustache is not coming to the major leagues with him.
Oh, that is sad to report. I would like to stay on the pitching side here and also welcome Jay Korn to the podcast. My question here is, we've got Ricky Nolasco and Brian Dunsing both due to come off the DL relatively soon here. And you talked about Tommy Malone moving to the bullpen to make room for Ricky Nolasco in the rotation. But we haven't talked about what that means for these guys getting called up. Who's going to have to go down? I know that Blaine Boyer somehow has pitched, not terrible the last few times he's been out, hasn't given up any runs. But I think the biggest complaint for me on Blaine Boyer is that he is not doing well with inherited runners. I think he's allowing something like 50% of inherited runners to score. Anytime there's been a guy on third base with less than two outs, that guy scores 100% of the time. And I know these are small sample size things, but Blaine Boyer just isn't good enough. And so for my money, when Dunsing comes back, I'd love to see Boyer go down, even though I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's much more likely that either Theobald or Tonkin, who's up for a cup of coffee here, goes back packing. And Ricky Nolasco, I think, is going to be the first guy back, and he's going to be the most serious. How do they manage this bullpen? Tim Stauffer has just looked terrible. And so I don't know how much longer you can leave him on. Is he going to have a mysterious DL stint coming? I don't know, but I'm very anxious to see what the Twins do with this bullpen staff, because there's a lot of guys that aren't working. And when you're talking about a Twins starting rotation that actually has a better strikeout rate than their bullpen, and both are last in the league, that's a scary thought.
Good evening, gentlemen. Sorry for the tardiness. What I was wondering is there any chance that a position player could go down and we add an extra pitcher?
I don't think this team could support that. I mean, Eric was just talking about how if he could make two moves, he'd bring up Pinto and Hicks in exchange for either Schaefer or Robinson, one of the two, and Chris Herman. But I don't know. I mean, you could send down Ricky or Eduardo Nunez and bring up another pitcher, but I think Nunez in limited duty has just hit too much to go anywhere, even though he doesn't really provide a lot of value.
There's plenty of pitching right now that they don't need another pitcher.
There's plenty of pitchers. Plenty of pitching.
And they are work. A lot of them are working back-to-back days. I mean, I got maybe way out there, but what about sending Vargas down?
That's something I talked about going into the end of this offseason, and I think in our first show, I think that at this point you've got to do something, and leaving him sit on the bench for 3 days, probably not the right decision. But I don't know that sending him down in exchange for another pitcher and getting another arm is the right move. I'd rather send him down and get another bat up. You know, someone that would give this roster a little bit more flexibility than a guy who can just DH or play bad first base.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Tim Stauffer is utterly expendable. You know, he's not giving the team anything right now. You know, Caleb Thielbar has looked rough in a couple of outings. He's only pitched, you know, three innings, so that's not saying a lot there. But, you know, Stauffer is a guy that can go. I mean, J.R. Graham has looked good and bad and hasn't got a ton of use out there. Paul, your guy Blaine Boyer has last 2 weeks pitched pretty well, actually.
Stop saying that. He has not pitched very well his last 2 weeks. I feel like that's a total misnomer. I mean, how many times has he pitched in the last 2 weeks? I mean, if it's today is what, the 30th, so we're going back to the 15th. Okay, he's got what, 6 appearances in the last 2 weeks, and in those 2 weeks he's had 6 inherited runners, and he's allowed 3 of them to score. I mean, albeit in his last 3 outings, he has not given up an inherited runner scored and hasn't given up a run. But if you look at his 11 appearances this year, in 5 of them he's given up an inherited runner scored or a runner, one of his own runs has been given up. So you could say small sample size, putting it together. We dealt with this all year last year with Jared Burton. How he struggled early, but man, he's been coming back, whittling that ERA down. But as a reliever, you have to look beyond that because a lot of times your job is not to not let a new batter come up and get around the diamond. You got to stop the guys that are on base from getting around the diamond, and he hasn't done that.
Well, those three guys, Graham, Stauffer, and the other guy you just mentioned, Boyer. I kind of want to. It's been a month. I'd like to see him up here a few more weeks.
What else do you need to see from Stauffer or Boyer?
They haven't been all bad.
Stauffer has been all bad. Why don't you pull up his pitching line and then you tell me what's been good about it?
Well, he's an arm out of the bullpen when you're losing 9-2.
He's an arm out of the bullpen? Are you kidding me? Anyone could be an arm out of the bullpen.
Look, there's a lot of turmoil going on, especially just even in the last few hours. I'm just not willing to send one of these guys down because they've been mediocre in the first month of the season.
Well, you're going to have to because Nolasco's coming back, and unless they put Hughes onto the DL, has to go. And then Dunsing is coming back, and so someone else is going to have to go. So there's guys that have to move, and it's just a matter of how do you want to build your rotation? What do you want it to look like? They're going to have 3 left-handers in the bullpen right now, with Malone moving to the pen. So that's maybe okay because Perkins is your closer, so you can't really think of him as a situational lefty guy. Dunsing, you know, is the typical lefty guy. So then one other guy, that's not too terrible when you think of it that way, but maybe you don't need 3 lefties out there.
Yeah, well, I feel like that. I think Stauffer, I don't think he's long for this world. The Twins are paying him, what, $2 million to be out there this year? $2.2 million on the season. In his 8 appearances, he's given up runs in 6 of them. I mean, he's just looks terrible. He somehow miraculously recorded a win. He has a win and 1 save, or 1 hold on the season so far. He's just looked just overmatched. Strikeout numbers are disastrous. He has 2 strikeouts in 8 innings. I mean, I don't know what else you need to see, Jay, from Stauffer. I mean, he had great numbers in Petco, or not great numbers, but good numbers in Petco, and that's a ballpark that's going to give you a lot. So I don't know.
If we have to send somebody down, Stauffer would be my choice to send down. But
we got to send 2 guys because Nolasco and Dunsing are coming back.
It certainly seems like Hughes is going to land on the DL from what I see. I don't know. Maybe that's not the case.
So I don't know. Maybe is it time to look at J.R. Graham sending him back to Atlanta? Saying thanks for coming up. You look great in your stirrups, but so long.
Well, J.R. Graham hasn't pitched since the 19th. So, you know, that's 11 days now where we haven't seen him. So, you know, what are you going to do with that? That's a guy that's just in the bullpen to be out there. And ever since, you know, he's made 1 appearance since he he plunked Rios against Kansas City. 1 appearance where he gave up an earned run, 2 hits, a walk, and a home run, you know, against Cleveland. And we haven't seen him since then. So maybe they like his guy. Maybe they like his upside if they can, you know, figure out how to get him throwing strikes. But if you're not using the guy, no use keeping him around. Maybe, you know, maybe you send another Billy Bullock type. There's a guy in the minors that maybe looks a lot better to other teams than he does to the Twins, and you find a way to keep J.R. Graham in AAA and work some things out, or move him to AA and, you know, something.
Yeah, and I mean, having a guy like J.R. Graham, the issue is that, as Jay was talking about, our bullpen's been fairly taxed. They haven't been affected. And if you got a guy that you're not even comfortable sending out there in a remotely close game, a game, you know, that's two or three runs still hanging in the balance when you need an arm out there and you can't even send him in there. I mean, at what point do you have to say, we like his upside, but we just can't afford it? Because the Twins right now, I think, are, what, five games out? And while I know it's early, if there's any chance of them competing, that those roster spots are going to become very important. And when you're wasting a roster spot on Eduardo Nunez, J.R. Graham, that's two spots. Now you're playing with 23 guys, and that's just you can't do that and expect to be a good ball club.
No, I'm with you there. I didn't realize it'd been so long for Graham. I was actually going to say, you know, maybe he's a long reliever. Starter gets out, knocked out in the second or third inning. Graham's the guy you go to. You can count on him being rested and stuff like that. But 11 days seems like an awful long time.
Yeah. So I don't know. Just to recap some of these roster moves. So we talked. Nolasco is coming back from the DL this weekend. Dunsing, it sounds like, is going to follow him quickly. Casey Fien did go officially on the disabled list, and Michael Tompkins coming up. And then the other question marks right now is that Phil Hughes left his last start early with a hip impingement or something, hip soreness, hip flexor, something like that. And then Jordan Schaefer left a game early. He said his quad locked up or his knee locked up, which isn't something that's good for a guy that's relying on his legs for speed and defense. So one of those two guys, or even both, could find their way to the disabled list, you know, in the next couple of days if they're not, you know, back to 100%.
Well, and it sounds – Phil Hughes, I think, is scheduled to throw a simulated game here on his work day, and it sounded like all indications were he thinks he's going to be fine. And, I mean, Jordan Schaefer, I'd rather you just send him down. I mean, if he's even remotely hurting, either you send him straight to the DL and then give him a nice long rehab assignment before he comes back, or you just send him to AAA and then put him on the DL. But you probably, there's probably rules against doing that. But
just. Can you believe it's April 30th? All right, we've had the Irvin Santana disaster. We've had the Ricky Nolasco on the DL. Trevor May's been missiled in the arm. Now Hughes possibly going on the DL. Malone moving to the bullpen. I mean, we're 4.5 weeks in. What the hell? Could it have gone any worse? Could it have possibly gone any worse?
Well, for as bad as it's been, as many pitchers the Twins have had to use, the one thing that I've been thankful for so far into this season is that the guys that the Twins are calling up, the guys to make those starts, are guys with upside. We're not bringing in the guys that we saw 2 years ago. Johan Pino is not expected to be the savior coming up from AAA. I mean, we're not looking at who is that guy wore stirrups from Minnesota a couple years ago? Terrible.
Nishek?
No, God, no, we're not that far ago. Jesus. I give up. But the guys that they're calling up from AAA are quality arms, guys that you can dream on a little bit. I mean, you know, Santana goes down with the suspension. Mike Pelfrey gets put in. Mike Pelfrey has pitched very nicely the last couple weeks. You know, Tommy Malone hasn't been very good, but he hasn't been as bad as he was last season. I mean, Trevor May comes up, had a rough first going, but then it looked very sharp in that game. He got hit in the elbow out in Seattle in front of his hometown crowd. I mean, he was looking very good. He's been great. He has two walks on the season, 13 strikeouts. I mean, he looks very good. I'm very excited for what Trevor May brings to the table.
And he did not want to come out of that game. He was on the mound saying, I'm good, I'm fine, let me throw. And he left that game under the manager's on the manager pulling his ear off the mound because I think he wanted to stay in that game badly.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It was his first time pitching in front of all his family and friends out there. He's a Kelso, Washington native. Paul, you have to tell me where that Kelso is, but I think it's near Seattle.
Near-ish.
So, I mean, it's not, Seattle's their major metro area.
Yeah, I think I read something like he had like 100 tickets or something for the game for family and friends. So it was a pretty big outing for him. And like I said, he looked very good out there. And as long as we're talking about that Seattle series, I got a chance to see the Twins play with my own two eyes on the Friday night game when they had Phil Hughes dueling against Felix Hernandez. The whole game time was 2 hours and 3 minutes, a very quick game. Both starters with complete games. King Felix, just amazing. Phil Hughes had a very good game, was victimized by two long balls, but otherwise was very effective. Just like his last start before he left. You know, he works quick, and he's going to give up those long fly balls, which we knew when the Twins got him from New York that he was susceptible to the home run. But he has pitched very well. He continues to put no extra guys on base, getting some strikeouts this year, kind of a lone bright spot. But just watching those two guys pitch so quick with Felix and then Phil Hughes on opposing him, that was a very exciting game to go to. And I really enjoyed the pace of that game. I think I went to go get a beer with the fellow Twins fan mid-inning, and it took us almost – we missed almost two innings getting a beer.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Conversely, I was at the game yesterday, Wednesday afternoon, the 10-7 or 10-8 affair, and that game was almost 4 hours long. I think it might have been the longest game I'd ever been to.
Yeah, the Twins gave that one away a couple of times.
Yeah, you know what? They really did, but a couple things impressed me. I mean, they fought hard. They just never gave up. There were some sloppy plays on both ends. I mean, Miguel Cabrera hit two home runs. It's hard to win when Miguel Cabrera goes deep twice.
It's also hard to win when Tim Stauffer pitches. Hi-yo! Zing!
Yeah, well, I mean, how many runs did they give away on defense as part of that as well? I mean, we talked about that ad nauseum, I think, already, but there was certainly, I think, two runs in that game that the defense cost them, and that doesn't get you a win when you lose by three, but certainly not great. So I don't know. The White Sox are coming to town this weekend, and it should be fun. There'll be people in the ballpark for this. I mean, the White Sox are always going to draw a crowd in Minnesota. So I think yesterday at the ballgame, they announced a crowd of 18,000.
I took note of it because every time it's under 20, I take note. It was like 19 and some change, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's your paid attendance, right?
Right.
And there's not that many people in the ballpark. So less than 50% of the tickets even sold. And, you know, I think you can just walk up and buy a $6 ticket and then go sit wherever the heck you want right from the box office. So if you're me and you like to see a lot of baseball for cheap, it's good. But if you, I mean, like to feel the energy in the ballpark and the sights and the sounds, you're not getting that. It feels like you're there for batting practice and they're just playing the whole dang game.
You know, I still maintain that for a Wednesday noon start game, 3/4 of the lower deck was filled, you know, 30%, 40% of the upper deck was filled. Yeah, there were a lot of bald spots, and people migrated from the overhang into the sun. But, I mean, I was actually kind of impressed with how many – you know, all the Budweiser deck was jammed. The bleachers, the Great Clips bleachers were jammed. Most of the, you know, the good seats behind home plate and the bases were filled. So, I mean, it's not that bad, Eric.
But it's pretty bad. There's only four teams with worse attendance so far this year in terms of average number of fans in the ballpark. And it's some cold weather teams. You know, it's Cleveland, Chicago, Minnesota, so that doesn't necessarily help. And then it's Miami and Tampa Bay. So anytime you're in league with those teams, attendance-wise, that's pretty rough. You know,
yeah,
I mean, the
yeah.
White Sox, like the Twins, have been bad in the past. The Marlins are the Marlins. Tampa Bay is never going to draw well. And Cleveland is cold. And so, I mean, but this is bad. This is just over 50%.
There'll be people there this weekend. Chris Sale's on Thursday. There's Fur Bomber Hat Night on Saturday. Then on Monday is actually supposed to be Phil Hughes' bobblehead night, Star Wars.
Hughes the Force. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully he's not on the DL because that would be like not cool. But so they got some cool giveaways coming up. They got the White Sox are in town. Like you were saying, that sells well. So I think the weather's supposed to be good. So I think this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're home all through next week. This is like the fourth game of an 11-game homestand. So I think for certainly the White Sox will see some crowds.
Yeah, I don't know. What else you guys want to talk about? I mean, I feel like when you look at the Twins season, if you can subtract the first week and a half when this team was 1-6, they've essentially looked like the frustrating, at least marginally entertaining team that we like to see. I mean, they're 8-6 since that 1-6 start. So they've been in some ball games. They've won some series. You know, they had a chance to win a couple other series. They're giving runs away offensively, defensively, the pitching. You know, they're up and down, which is, I think, about what we expected. You know, but this is still going to be, I think, a bad team, and you're going to be pulling your hair out and screaming at the TV and yelling at Dick and Bert and Gladden and Corey Provis on the radio as much as anything else, because this team's just, they're going to be good enough and show you enough glimpses to make all these losses and all these things where they fall on their face that much more frustrating. And until they're starting to cycle up some of these guys that have some upside, you're really just going to be scratching your head and maybe tuning out after the sixth inning.
Yeah, I mean, the lone bright spot, I think, offensively anyway, has been Joe Mauer, who now, with a couple-hit performance yesterday, has got his average up right at 300. You know, he's got, I think, 5 doubles, which is nice. But when's the last time that Joe Mauer hit a home run? I mean, I'm not expecting Joe Mauer to hit home runs, but...
Paul, Joe don't hit home runs. Joe don't hit home runs, okay?
I think I just did some math real quick. I think the last home run he hit was August 17th. So it's been over almost 60 games. I think 58 games was the count I got since he hit a home run.
Someone had that stat on Twitter the other day when he was at 56 games, and it matched, you know, DiMaggio's hitting streak of 56 games. But it has been a long time. He doesn't have a lot of power. His on base is 380. He's slugging 388.
Oh, I'm not complaining. I don't want to say that at all. I'm not complaining one bit about what Joe Mauer is doing. I just, you know, I don't think that you expected it to be that dry.
Hey, I mean, he's just 6 extra base hits, you know, but they're 5 doubles and then the 1 triple. So, but if he's hitting 300 and he's got a 380 on base, he's kind of moving in that direction.
Playing every day.
That's okay. They're not expecting Joe Mauer to be a power hitter.
Well, I think that we heard some rumors, I think, in the last week that Paul Molitor has been maybe discussing or at least looking at some lineup changes, that he's even considered putting Joe Mauer in that leadoff spot, which I think, as you said, Eric, is getting on base 38% of the time. He's not hitting for a lot of power. I mean, that kind of sounds like that might be a great guy to put at the top of the lineup.
He runs pretty decent.
I mean, he's not the quickest guy, but Danny Santana can't get on base, and he's been thrown out twice in 3 chances. So it's not like you need that speed right there. I mean, Joe can still move around the bases, go from first to third, score on double.
He's got a triple. Dude's got a triple.
Yeah, so does Nelson Cruz, Jay. Triples are kind of special like that.
Joe Mauer has got almost 60% or 68 points of on base over the next regular, you know, Kurt Suzuki. So, I mean, he certainly is there. Your leadoff hitters, Brian Dozier has 300 on base. Danny Santana has, 267? Ouch. That's lower than even I expected with the hot last couple of games. So you're giving away an out at the top of the order with either one of those guys.
Which Vargas?
Vargas is 246, so even worse than that. He has really struggled and doesn't take a walk to save his life.
Guys, Kenny's got to go down. I'm serious. He's got to go down. Don't you see it? Don't you agree?
I would not be surprised to see that. And I think, like I said earlier, I think that would give you a little bit more roster flexibility. Even if you just change Kenny's Vargas and you turn him into Aaron Hicks, that'd be a lot better. I'd stop complaining a little bit. You at least put Hicks out there, put Schaefer and Robinson on the bench. But I mean, again, then you got Shorten, Robinson, and Nunez, and you only need one of those guys on the bench. So I think there's a lot of room for this team to get better, and at least for this team to have more talent on the field, and maybe we still have to wait for some of those guys to put it together, but I don't know how much longer you can just be bad with old people who aren't getting it done. At some point, you got to bring up these young guys, bring maybe Aaron Hicks back, see if he can continue to get on base, bring Pinto up, see if he can make that bat work at the big league level, even if he's just a bench bat, once a week kind of catcher guy. I mean, you know, you got to bring him up. And I think we're going to talk about some of the young guns here coming up when we go down on the pond after the break. There are bats coming, and maybe it's not the big names, Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton lighting up the world down at double triple A, but there's bats that are ready to come up and take the place of these guys that are struggling.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to seem like we're just ragging on these Twins. I mean, they're 3-3 in the last week, so I mean, that's
Woo!
You know, that's, like I said though, that's what we get, and there's certainly room for improvement. And when you're looking at who's the 24th and 25th guy on the roster, you're interested in talking about that. I mean, certainly you're trying to find ways to make this team marginally better a little bit here and there. And for a team to just flirt with 500 for this ball club, that's going to be a lot of work for them. And so, I mean,
you know what hasn't helped? This is the second time they're facing Sale. They faced Price. They faced Kluber, even though I think they beat Kluber. They faced, like, it seems like the Twins more than any other team. And I feel like I watch quite a few games every week. It seems like the Twins more than every other team run into a lot of aces.
Well, everyone runs into an ace one out every 5 days. I mean, the Twins certainly haven't done anything against aces. So when they face these guys, they've essentially mostly fallen just flat on their face. So that makes it even more glaring. But I don't think they're necessarily facing pitching that's so much better than anyone else is facing.
Yeah, and you know what?
Their only problem is that they don't get to face the Twins pitching.
Well, I guess that's something. I think this would probably be a good place for us to stop and take a break, because what I want to talk about, Eric, you said they're 3-3 in the last week, but we've had a lot of guys that have actually performed well, especially offensively over the last week, and again, small sample size, but the last week we've had guys that actually looked pretty competent out there, and I'd like to have something positive to talk about here for a change. So I think we should step away, refill our beers, and then give ourselves all a little B12 injection so we can be a little bit happier when we come back from the break.
All right.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. We are now talking about the best performers of the week with the pitcher and hitter of the week. We'll start with the pitching, because we pretty much ragged on the bullpen for a long time and talked about the Twins not having anyone great in the starting rotation, but they got actually a couple of nice performances. So Mike Pelfrey essentially came out and pitched the best game that he's pitched in a Twins uniform earlier this week. 7 innings, 7 strikeouts, including, I think he struck out the side in the second inning of that start. Just 2 walks and 1 earned run. So a really impressive start for Pelfrey. Probably secured his spot in the bullpen in the rotation with Nolasco returning. And then Jay's favorite, the big stopper, Kyle Gibson. 7 innings, just 3 strikeouts and 3 walks, but only 2 earned runs. And if you can get Gibson through 7 full innings, I'll take that every time. 2 earned runs, 3 earned runs, even 4 earned runs. If Gibson can go 7 innings, that's not too bad. That's, you know, about what you expect from him. So I like that. I'm encouraged by that. And then a trio of guys in the bullpen, Boyer, Perkins, and Thielbar, pitched 8 innings this last week, gave up just 3 hits, 1 walk. Perkins had 3 saves, and then they also picked up a hold. And gave up no earned runs. So 3 hits over 8 innings and no earned runs from 3 of your main bullpen guys is pretty nice. So,
and let's also throw in there Phil Hughes, who had 2 starts in the past week, ended up taking a loss and a no decision there. But in his 13 innings of work, 13 strikeouts. And for a twin staff across the board who can't seem to miss any bats, very impressive to see what Phil Hughes has been doing in his last few starts out. And in addition to just not walking anyone, he's getting strikeouts. And for me, that's what I want to see. That's the kind of guy, like I talked about earlier, I love the pace that he pitches at. I love the way he's been missing bats. I think in his last start, I think he threw like 35 or 40 straight fastballs to open up the game. I mean, he wasn't even messing with the off-speed or the changeup, just fastball, fastball, fastball.
And well, yeah, he's got like three fastballs, right? He's got the four-seamer, the two-seamer, the cutter.
I mean, it was that's what I want to see, is just going at guys. And, I mean, yeah, he's maybe, quote-unquote, pitching to contact, just beating up the strike zone, but he's beating it up, and guy, he's giving it to people, and they can't hit it. I mean, he's going to turn into old Bartolo Colon, you know, eventually working in the mid-80s and just getting crazy movement on his stuff. That's loving Phil Hughes, so sorry to steal the segment there. You maybe can tell that's where my vote's going already.
All right, Jay, who's your guy? You going with Big Pelf?
I am going with Big Pelf. Yeah, I'm going with Big Pelf. And the reason is he just did not look like the Mike Pelfrey that I've seen in Twins uniform. That game, he was in command. He struck out the side. I mean, he looked like a different pitcher. So if he continues to do anything close to what he was, the way he carried himself in that last start, I mean, Pelfrey could be the surprise twin of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't keep track of who we give this award to week to week. We should have started a spreadsheet for that. But I think every time Pelfrey has an above average start, we give it to him just because we have such low expectations.
Well, you have low expectations. I got high expectations for a guy who looks like a Sasquatch.
But this is a good start no matter who you are and no matter how many times you lick your hand between pitches. So, you know, I'm giving it to Mike Pelfrey. I like what he did out there. It was exciting, the strikeouts, you know, limiting the walks and pitching, again, through the seventh inning is
yeah, and
is
only
impressive.
Three hits, very impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah. So Mike Pelfrey, he's our guy this week. And then with the bats, you know, I picked three guys for this, and you probably could have picked three more guys in addition. But so I put down Oswaldo Arcia. He had a home run, a walk, an intentional walk, and then he had a .467 on base the last week. Joe Mauer had four extra base hits, three doubles, and then that game-winning triple. Also had three walks plus an intentional walk. His on base was .393 this past week. And then Eduardo Nunez, the guy that we love to hate, or maybe we just hate to hate him, whatever he is, but he had a couple of walks, a couple of doubles, and his OBP was .389 this past week as well. So he was up there. I mean, Dan Santana had a decent week. He still hasn't walked, and I don't know. We probably should start some kind of pool whenever Danny Santana eventually walks. You know, he hit .380 this week, I think, with no power. And, you know, Schaefer had quite a week. You know, Suzuki had a nice week. A lot of runs scored this week. I mean, I'm trying to look back. You know, if you go back, you know, 7-10 yesterday, they scored three runs on Tuesday, four runs on Monday, four runs on Sunday, five runs on Saturday. You know, so they scored a lot of runs in the last five or six games. So the offense is doing what it needs to do, and they're just, you know, some of those guys in the bullpen are giving things away. So a lot of positive offensive performances this week. And I don't know, I feel like Oswaldo Arcia is needing to do things with a stick in his hands right now. So I'm giving it to him for what he did in the last week because he's giving everything else back on defense.
And that home run that he hit the other day, cleared the seats onto the plaza. That was a bomb. That was a beautiful home run. But I've got to give it to Joe Mauer, who is just continues to do Joe Mauer things. I mean, he had three doubles in the last week, three walks, only four strikeouts, hit .320, .393, .520 on the week. Very impressive. Love to see that. He's Joe Mauering. He's Joe Mauer being Joe Mauer, and that's what you expect from Joe Mauer. And as I talked about earlier, he's the only guy in the club really offensively who all season's been getting it done. And I see no reason to not give him the award.
I am also going with Joe. I think it's well deserved. I mean, for all those reasons you said, Paul. So I'll just throw my support behind Joe.
Way to go, Joe. Okay, yeah. So that's what's been going on with the Big League Ball Club. And this week we're going to try to pump some life back into one of our old segments.
This is one of my favorite segments. And, you know, we kind of went away from it this winter. I want to say we started this Down on the Pond segment 2 winters ago when there wasn't a lot to talk about. When we started going through, like, here's our top prospects, the Buxtons, the Sanos, what they did last year. You know, kind of just going through the top 20 to top 30 guys. But after we got past, you know, those first tier of great prospects and continued this segment through the season and kind of all the way up until this past winter, the neat thing about it is you're digging down and you're finding guys maybe that the average Twins fan hasn't heard of, guys maybe that some of us have never heard of before, and just kind of checking in. Who are these organizational guys? Put it up, you know, a decent week or a good couple of weeks to start a season. You know, what are they doing down there? How do we really learn the depth and more about who's in this system? So it's a pretty neat segment, I think, that we do, and I'm happy that we're going to be able to start getting back to it now with the minor league system in full swing.
And with that being said, I think the guys at the top of the prospect lists who we did in season one and early season two here, you're not going to hear us talk about those guys here on Down to the Pond, and we're going deeper. We're going a little bit more askew, and this week, we're going down to Double A to take a look at a guy, Steven Wickens. He plays second base for the Chattanooga Lookouts. He's been splitting duty there with fellow prospect Levi Michael.
Are the Chattanooga Lookouts doing?
The Lookouts are not doing so well. I have not been very impressed with this year. I think they're 9-12 or so on the season, a few games under 500. But Steven Wickens is doing his best. He's, like I said, he's pretty much been spelling Levi Michael there at second base, has about two-thirds of the playing time as Levi Michael, but has really kind of put together a nice early season line. He's hitting .290, .353, .419, so not a whole lot of power, and maybe that's probably not what you expect from second base, a lot of power there, but really has been able to get on base and be productive. And so even though the Chattanooga Lookouts are struggling a little bit this season, there are some bright spots down there. And it's not just the big names. It's not Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano. Those aren't the guys we're seeing this strong production from. We're seeing it from a whole bunch of guys. And Steven Wickens, one of those guys, I think, that we need to take a little time and talk about him. He was drafted out of the Florida Gulf Coast, was the Twins' 33rd round selection in 2011. So I think it was like number pick 1,000 or more on the season. So not a guy a lot of people are going to know about, but you know, a guy who's been in the organization for, you know, this is his fifth year and worked his way up to Double A. And I said, this has been a very so far so good at the Double A level here in his debut season with the Lookouts. I don't know.
And he's a guy that's a little bit older. I mean, he's not a prospect, I guess. He's not a guy.
Yeah, and he's not a big guy. He's 5'10", but only 170 pounds. That's what he's listed at. So he's.
But he's a guy that I think, you know, gives the Double A manager Minkiewicz, it gives the organization a chance to kind of move guys around and play them in different positions. Because Wickens has played second base. He's played some third base. He's played, I think, left field. He's DH'd a couple of times. So a guy that's moved around the roster and done whatever a skipper has asked him to do. And, you know, he's hitting fairly well, very well for what, you know, we could thought of what he could do. Paul, you kind of mentioned him in the same breath as Levi Michael. And Levi Michael essentially has the same stat line as Steven Wickens so far this year. I think Michael is hitting like 280, 350, 400. So very similar in terms of what he's done so far for the club. So, you know, I mean, this guy's a nice story. He's organizational depth through and through. I mean, you're never going to see him in a Twins uniform unless it's a, I don't know. Best case scenario is that he becomes the Dan Rolfing of middle infield, right? I mean, that's his upside there. Just a guy that kind of sticks around and does enough. Like Chris Herman, that kind of thing. So just hangs around. I don't know, but nice little guy, a good guy to know about. He's old for the level, even at Double A, because he was, you know, a 4-year college guy. So he's not going to surprise anyone.
And he's from Canada, eh?
Yeah, maybe he's like your next Brian Dinkelman, right? a guy who's near and dear to my heart, you know, hangs around long enough, plays enough positions that eventually the Twins will just reward him with the September cup of coffee, and maybe he'll get a bunch of hits while he's up and be famous that way. So, I don't know. Interesting little guy. Not going to do anything exciting, but I think if you're one of those guys that's paying attention to the minor league report that they do over at Twins Daily every day, they recap all the minor league action, I would say you might see his name, you know, two or three times this season if you're really paying attention to that. He's going to have some good games. He'll hit a couple of home runs now and then. And as you're looking to see, you know, what does Buxton do? What is Sano doing? And he's a guy that I think will get sprinkled in there a little bit and is maybe a little bit undervalued because he doesn't play a premium position, but moves all over the field.
Yeah, and let's stay in Chattanooga for a little bit and talk about some of those top prospects. You just mentioned Miguel Sano, and he's got 3 home runs already on the year, but he's hitting .150, not getting on base, sub .300 on base percentage, has made 4 errors already on the young season, and definitely shaking some of that rust off. And the same thing goes for Byron Buxton, who's hitting, I think, .221 right now, a little bit better on base at .312, but just also not hitting for any power to .353 slugging. So those big guys at the top of your list, maybe not turning any heads, but when you look at guys who are, Dalton Hicks down there has got 3 home runs on the season. He's hitting .361 with a .466 on base percentage.
Well, Adam Brett Walker. He's a guy that we talked about in the Florida State League last year. I think he led all of minor league baseball with like 31 home runs last year. He's got 5 dingers on the year so far. Already 11 RBIs, and you know he is a kind of a Kenny's Vargas type, right? He's not going to hit for high average, but I think has a little bit more contact skill than Vargas. And he has the same type of power upside. I mean, he hits the ball a long way when he hits it, and he's off to a nice start here in AA, so I think he's right now tied for the minor league lead with those 5 home runs. So they have some nice pieces, a lot of power in Chattanooga. A couple other nice pieces
down there. Twins fans may remember Jorge Polanco came up last year. He's having himself a very nice start to the season, playing shortstop for the Lookouts, hitting .268, .297, .437 with 19 hits on the season. So he's looking good. And what I'm most surprised about, Travis Harrison out in left field, having a very nice season so far. So a lot of guys that I think, even the big names maybe at the top, but a lot of guys that you'll be familiar with having nice little seasons here to start. And while Chattanooga probably has a ways to go to get things figured out and turn things around as a team, a lot of good stuff going on, and I'm very excited to see what comes. One thing I've been less than excited about is the pitching down in Chattanooga, and that starts at the back of their bullpen with Nick Birdie, who has just not looked very impressive in the 7 innings of work that he's given up, that he's done so far.
He's not throwing strikes.
Yeah, I mean, 11 walks and only 8 strikeouts. That's a .257 whip for those of you that are counting out there. Yeah, that's 11 not walks get it done.
In 7 innings. I mean, so this, you know, so 11 in 7 innings, that's not doing it. And he's a guy, he's big velocity. And this is a guy that, you know, we talked about this winter. He has the skills and the talent right now that he could pitch in a major league bullpen. But it seems like his command took a step back this year. I don't know if he's trying to be a little bit more picky, if they got him trying to work on another pitch, trying to, you know, develop a changeup or some kind of off-speed pitch, and that's just not working out. But, you know, certainly has some things to work through there. You know, Jose Berrios has looked very well so far earlier in this season. I mean, he has 28 strikeouts in 22 innings, you know, so help is on the way. Tyler Duffy is off to a real nice start there in Chattanooga as well. You know, he's a less heralded guy, but a guy who's done some nice things for them this year, despite not yet picking up a win for that team.
Another one of those big velo guys, Zach Jones, 13 strikeouts and 1 walk in his 7 innings of work. Very impressive so far.
Yeah, and Jones, right, he was in the AFL last year. He was one of those guys.
Yeah, I think he had to leave early from the AFL. Maybe you're thinking of Jake Reed, also on the AFL, but he's struggling so far this season a little bit.
No, Zach Jones, he had 11 games in the AFL last year. Okay.
So, maybe I'm confused then.
He pitched in relief there for them and, you know, and did okay. And then, you know, so, some interesting things, some excitement, some disappointments. But, yeah, altogether an interesting team. And then don't forget Alex Wimmers is part of that squad as well. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while and following the Twins closely, Wimmers was one of the Twins' former first-round draft picks. They took him at the back end of the 2010 draft.
He was college guy, Big Ten pitcher of the year, I believe.
Yeah, out of Ohio State. And he was doing okay. And then all of a sudden in 2012, he stopped throwing strikes altogether.
Got the yips in a bad way.
And then has kind of essentially for the last 2.5 years been working his way back from that. It seemed like in the latter half of 2014, he had started to put it together and had a strong stint at New Britain to end the year. But he's been roughed up in his first couple of starts for Chattanooga. And, you know, that's, I think for a lot of these guys and for the Twins, maybe it's a new league. And so maybe they're just adjusting to that.
No way. New league, schmeeg.
Their starting rotation, though, I mean, the guys they've put out there, Jose Berrios, been very impressive. DJ Baxendale and his four starts is 2-0 with a 1.07 ERA, striking out almost a guy an inning. I mean, so they have been getting some good performances. Tyler Duffy in four starts is somehow 0-2 with only a 3.16 ERA, giving up only 9 runs in those four starts, and again, striking out more than a batter an inning. So they're getting some strong starting pitching performances. It just, you look at the numbers here, it's a lot of those bullpen guys. Looks like they're having some trouble early in the season, along with not super great offensive performances as a lot of these guys adjust to the AA level after a very successful high A campaign last season.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's still a good team in Chattanooga. I think they're 10-9, Paul, I think. Is that... or 9-10, so they're not as bad as you said. 9-12, they're 9-10. They should be a lot better than that. They're, as we said before, they were ranked as the second most talented minor league team to start the year. They've still got all those guys on the club, so they're going to put it together. Don't panic about Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano getting off to slow starts. You know, they're going to come around. They have all the talent and all the skills. They're going to put it together.
And they've been on the road pretty much all season long. I think they've only got 4 home games to go with 15 away games to start. So definitely no reason to count them out. And I think, as we talked about, the two big guys there, Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano, they got a lot of rust to shake off, plus adjusting to a new level of baseball. So once those guys get going, it's going to be hard to control this lineup. I think the only way to stop them then is when those guys start getting promoted up to AAA.
Yeah, so there's still some excitement down there. So things to watch for. Maybe next week we'll talk a little bit about Fort Myers, Cedar Rapids, and Rochester and kind of spread some love around this minor league system, because as the Twins continue to frustrate us, we need to look for some bright spots in the organization to keep us sane.
Keep us sane. Sane in the membrane.
Oh, man. You're insane in the brain.
Okay, so then we're going to go to my favorite soundbite of the week. Where are we going, Jay?
Ears from around the world.
Woo-wee. That's pretty. That's
pretty. Oh, man. Let me just kick this off. I'm drinking an IPA from the Millstream Brewing Company. This is an Iowa Pale Ale.
An Iowa Pale Ale, huh?
You can tell from my reaction, I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is nothing. About I got nothing out of you
the
guys.
The excitement, anytime anyone mentions anything about Iowa, now that Chris Bryant is gone, there's nothing good to talk about in Iowa. They got corn, and they got that big old lake where rich people like to party from Minnesota.
Okoboji.
That's about it. I mean, it's the land of farmers' daughters.
Yeah, well, anyways, this is the Iowa Pale Ale. It's pretty decent. I bought it because it's an IPA of another sort. It's pretty standard fare IPA-wise, so I like it. I'm enjoying it, and it was nice to sip on over the past week or so, going through this sixer.
That's cool. I'll go next because I'm going to be a disappointment. I have some stuff to go to with Faith tonight, so I'm drinking nothing.
Boo. Jay, you've really gone downhill this summer as the weather has warmed up.
Listen.
Quality beers to Svedka Dew to nothing.
Eric, I was at the game both Wednesday and Thursday. I drank good craft beer. I would love to tell you about all the craft beer I sampled at Target Field in the last 2 days. But tonight, yeah, nah. So, sorry, boys.
Well, this week I have a beer creation. You may remember last time on the podcast, I was drinking a Bridgeport Trilogy number 3 Brewers Class 30 year celebration beer. And 2 weeks before
that,
2 weeks before that, I was drinking a Liney's Berry Weiss. Well, this week I got a little bit Dr. Frankenstein going on, and what I've done is combine the Bridgeport Trilogy number 3 Brewers Class beer along with a Berry Weiss, and now I have a Berry Bridgeport Trilogy number 3 Brewers Class beer.
And it's, what is that like?
It's quite delicious. I don't know if you've ever experimented mixing Leinenkugels together. You could take the honey Weiss and mix it with the berry Weiss, and then you get the honey bear. A little bit too sweet for me. You take a canoe paddler and mix it with the berry Weiss, and you get a berry canoe, a canoe full of berries, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of untapped greatness out there in beer combinations. So I tried my hand at it this week, and I'm very impressed with my result.
Why do you have all these crappy Leinenkugel beers at your house?
Because I bought the case for $9.
Oh, this is still that same PX purchase you made?
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
It takes a long time to drink 24 Berry Weiss. I don't know, because you can't really drink more than one.
Yeah, no, they're like a reverse Pringles.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's enough beer. Let's go around the league. I think there's some interesting things to talk about this week. Kind of the big news that kind of led the stories was Josh Hamilton, who had the drug deal and injury to start the year. He was traded from the Angels to the Rangers, and he was essentially traded just to get him out of Anaheim. I think the Rangers ate, what, like $6 or $8 million of the 60 that's left on his contract?
$6 million for him for 3 years.
And the Angels get cash considerations and a player to be named later, which the player to be named later is probably just going to be no one. So, yeah, I mean, all he has to do in Anaheim is be an average player for a year and a half, and the Rangers come out of that one on the plus side. And yeah, I don't know. It's perplexing. I don't know what the heck the Angels were doing, because they don't do themselves any favors, because if they just wait for him to come off the DL, if he's terrible, they could get rid of him for eating all the salary the same way. And if he comes off the DL and has 3 hot weeks and you're still trying to move him, well, then you got a chance to move him and maybe only pay half of his salary. If you wanted to get rid of him that bad, there was ways to do it without being a disaster. I mean, his contract has been a disaster already, but it didn't have to be a PR disaster and a baseball disaster. I mean, you're essentially going to be paying $50 million to let him play for a division rival.
Yeah, it's really sad to see how that whole situation played out in Anaheim. It sounds like their owner out there just really just wanted to be done with it. I cannot condone the way that it was handled at all. And for the Rangers, this probably turns out to be a great deal, because I think a healthy Josh Hamilton is probably worth at least two wins a year, two wins above replacement. So they're getting that production for $6 million over the course of 3 years. I mean, the Rangers, if they're continuing to be out of contention into this season or even next season, and Hamilton kind of puts it together, they could look at moving him and get a nice little return on a player who very recently has been one of the best power hitters in the season, and they're only on the hook for $6 million.
Yeah, it's a win for them all across the board.
One thing I want to talk about is, again, we see that Tommy John surgeries are creating havoc across MLB. Homer Bailey is on the DL. Put him on the 60-day DL. It sounds like he's going to be out for a long time. If he's not going to get Tommy John, then he's going to get that rest and rehab, which could be 4 months. Who knows? Brandon McCarthy is going down. He's going to have Tommy John. And again, it's just, you never know. I mean, I think both of those guys are probably some injury risk, especially McCarthy, probably a 50-50 injury call there. But then we also have to see Adam Wainwright go down, pitchers hitting getting into trouble. I mean, it's just, it stinks to see guys like, I say, Homer Bailey and like Adam Wainwright, guys that are really those better pitchers in the league, guys that you'd want to watch anytime they go out there. And to see Adam Wainwright just not be able to pitch for the rest of the season, that's
a bummer. And the Wainwright thing has sparked a lot of debate around the league because Wainwright tore his ACL coming out of the batter's box while he was hitting. And so, you know, there's all this, now all this talk, you know, does the NL need to have the DH? Is the DH any good in the American League? What's the deal? Pitchers hitting, pitchers not hitting. You know, there's essentially no DH in the minor leagues, or there's no hitting for pitchers in the minor leagues. So pitchers, essentially, whenever they sign with the pro team, they spend 3 or 4 years not hitting at all. And then they show up in the National League, and now they've got a hit all of a sudden. They haven't done it for years, and of course they're going to look silly and ridiculous when they're out there doing that. So, you know, it brings up that debate whether there needs to be a DH across the league or no DH at all. And I don't know. I'm fine with the DH anywhere or any way they want to have it. It's one of those quirks that keeps the leagues different. And when you have interleague play every day, there needs to be something that separates the two leagues.
I think if anyone wants to argue for the DL being in both, or excuse me, the DH being in both leagues, you just need to watch Bartolo Colon hit. And that's going to give you enough enjoyment. But in all seriousness, I think this is one of the only times I've ever agreed wholeheartedly with Ron Gardenhire. For interleague play, I think it'd be a whole lot more fun if you played by the opposing team's rules. So you'd bring some DH to an NL park. You bring pitchers hitting to the AL park. You show those home fans the other side of baseball. I think that's a lot more fun than the way they currently do it. But probably that's probably even less likely to happen than eliminating, than going to the DH in the NL. So, I don't know. I think I'm with Eric. I think that you could probably change it. There doesn't need to be this difference of both leagues. It doesn't need to have a difference. Even a good hitting pitcher hits like what, maybe 200 in a career season at the plate. So I don't know that you need to do that. I think you could probably tweak the DH rule. If the pitcher comes out of the game, then you gotta also swap your DH, or you lose the DH. When your starting pitcher comes out, I think that's a lot more exciting. That could keep some of that strategy and that National League kind of baseball there on the senior circuit. But I definitely think that if we see more of these freak accidents, that you're probably going to have to look at getting rid of it. And I think that you're waiting for it to happen. I mean, I feel like it's inevitable that the DH is going to be in the National League. It's just the question of when.
Well, they already added instant replay. I mean, like, can't get much more. Might as well add the DH now too.
Are you against both of those things, Jay?
I don't know. I mean, it's just different, you know? It's just different. Part of the good thing about baseball is that you had stats that you could just measure under the same circumstances. The field dimensions were the same and the bases were the same, and now we have instant replay. I think that changes everything. So, whatever. I mean, instant replay gets it right. I'm all for that. I'm also all for the DH going to the National League.
And then also the other big thing talking about in baseball, and I'm not going to comment about the civil unrest going on in Baltimore after the funeral of Freddie Gray. We'll leave that for other podcasts to talk about. The pictures of the game between the White Sox and the Orioles when they had no fans in the stand, it's just a surreal picture to see those pictures of the game. There's a clip. One of the Baltimore announcers was calling a couple minutes of the game as if he was a golf announcer in hushed tones. That was pretty fun to see. But just a really different look. Like, I mean, you see a lot of games like in Chicago down in Tampa Bay where there's next to no one in the stands. But it's completely different to just see no one in the stands.
Yeah, the actually no one in the stands. You know, it was very bizarre. I think there was a shot. One guy just threw a ball into the crowd. You know, they're coming off. They throw the ball into the little kids on the first baseline or third baseline and throw it up there and rattles around in the seats. And, you know, so they had as much fun with it as they could, you know, all things considered with everything that's going on out there. But, you know, it seems like they handled the things the right way. They're making baseball, you know, not the primary issue out there.
But how weird is it? I mean, this is an entertainment sport, and they're entertaining no one.
They're moving, so it sounds like the Orioles are going to play a home series at Tampa Bay this weekend.
That's correct.
You know, so that's weird too. There's a lot of interesting things that are going to happen, and you feel for the people of Baltimore. You feel for the stadium employees. You know, a lot of the stadium employees are guys and women, or you know, they're hourly employees. That's maybe their second job or their third job, or you know, it's their way to make ends meet. And now all of a sudden they're not going to have work for a week. You know, so that's you know, a tough thing to deal with, and certainly. You know, it's a small thing compared to the rest of the things that are going on out there. And
yeah, I was a little surprised they didn't maybe move the game just down the road to the Nationals Park. The Nationals are playing in Atlanta. Maybe that was just too much logistics. They just need to, and this wasn't a divisional game. It's not like they're going to be back there later in the season for a series. They are going to make up the two games they missed on a doubleheader later in the season, but it's not like it's a divisional game where you'd have a bunch of opportunities to replay those games, so. But yeah, just such a weird sight to see those pictures and some video from that game.
Yeah, I don't know what else we had this week.
Not such a weird sight, Paul. Out in Seattle, tell me about Nelson Cruz. I mean, that guy is just on fire.
He is on fire. I watched him take the home run he hit off of Phil Hughes out to left field. Just man, that was like a no doubter. Almost got out of the ballpark out there in left field. Just, I mean, he just continues the same thing we saw last season with this Baltimore. His April was just ridiculous before he cooled off later in the season. But, I mean, the boomstick is booming.
Yep.
Is that what they call it out there?
No, that's his nickname, Boomstick. So oh, he man. Comes up to bat and everyone's, Boomstick. It's pretty awesome.
Too much coffee.
That sounds dumb.
You guys are dumb.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, we covered everything I wanted to talk about. The only other minor thing was the Astros, maybe the surprise team so far through the first month of the season.
Yeah, they've been very impressive. Their pitching is getting it done. A little bit disappointed to see Jed Lowry go on the disabled list. Sounds like he's going to have thumb surgery, which could take away a lot of that power that we've been seeing him put up early in the season. But they have so many young, talented players, and then they've got more guys down in AAA and AA that are ready to make that jump pretty soon. And then being already four or five games up on the rest of the division early, I mean, they're putting themselves in a very nice position. It's a very good division. They're going to continue to beat each other up going into the long haul, and if they can just play 500 ball from here on out, that's going to be pretty tough for somebody to overtake them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of teams surprising right now. I think during one of the breaks I was jabbering at Jay, but if the playoffs started today, the Yankees, Tigers, and Astros win divisions in the AL, and then the Royals and the Red Sox or the Rays are competing for the wild card spots. And then in the National League, it's the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and the overachieving Mets, and then the Cubs and the Pirates. So three teams from the Central Division in the National League all making the postseason. None of them Jays Reds, but even the Reds, who had a hot start, are just a game and a half out of that wild card and an all too early wild card discussion. But there's some teams that are surprising early, and that's just, it's a reminder, we are very early in the baseball season. There's a lot of baseball left to go. A lot of things can and will change, but certainly an exciting time if you're a Yankee fan, because no one thought the Yankees were going to be a postseason team this year, and all of a sudden they're putting victories together, and they kind of put an end to the Mets' early run of dominance and knocked them off of that. What, they had like a 9 or 10 game winning streak. So, baseball is fun no matter where it's being played, no matter who is playing it.
All right, hey, one more thing. Cole Hamels, is he going to get moved, and where?
Well, we talked about a lot of those pitching injuries, and I think that the Dodgers are probably the most likely landing place. I could also see him maybe going to the Cubs. And then also out here in Seattle, they're struggling to get some good pitching with Iwakuma going down to the disabled list. It would be interesting to see if the Mariners were willing to make a deal for one of their young, controllable starters, Taiwan Walker, who has lights-out stuff if he can put it together, and trying to make a move that maybe packages him along with some other guys for Cole Hamels to make a push for that postseason right here, right now. But I don't think he gets moved this year. There's the Phillies have another, 3 years of control on him counting this season, so they don't have to make a trade now to get value out of him if they don't get exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals would also be interested. I was watching one of their Monday night games on ESPN or something.
But they've got so much pitching. Even with Wainwright down, they may not have that elite starter at the front now. Lance Lynn is probably their number one. But they still have so much pitching in that organization that I don't think they need to go out and make that deal to get Cole Hamels, because I think the Phillies are going to hold whoever they get. They're going to hold them over the fence and beat every last penny out of him, and I don't think that's a move that the Cardinals will make. Who knows? Maybe the hometown Minnesota Twins going to package up some guys.
The Dodgers are a team that could come out there, and they've had injuries to their pitching staff, and they're certainly Ryu is out and he's injured, and McCarthy went out and got injured, and so all of a sudden they got some nobodies that not are just pitching as their number five, but guys that are nobody that's pitching in their number four. And when you've got a $200 million payroll, that's not something that you can have at the end of April. So they can be a team.
Scott Baker a nobody?
Scott Baker is worse than a nobody, I would argue.
Wow.
Yeah, so like I said, I think the Dodgers are the most likely spot for him to land. I just don't see the deal getting done this season.
Oh, some will happen. There's no way Hamels spends the whole year in Philly. I think the market for him will become more realistic in terms of what Philly wants, and the teams that want him will be willing to pay more. And the earlier they make that trade, I think the more benefit they get out of it. If you just keep on waiting and waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden, now you're, instead of getting 25 starts out of Cole Hamels, you're getting 20 starts out of Cole Hamels.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not just Hamels isn't just signed. He's not a free agent at the end of the season. He's got a couple more years of control, so it's not like you have to worry about getting him this week, and maybe you need those extra starts this season. But he's got years left of control. So, he's signed through 2018 with the team option for 2019. I don't know. There's no reason, I think, for the Phillies to be looking to have to move him now.
Good point.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week on the Talk to Contact podcast. Tune in next week to find out if Danny Santana ever takes a walk. Thank you to a couple of our fans who recently rated and reviewed us on iTunes. I want to give a special shout out to Adman87, who gave us 5 stars, and a shout out to Cracka Blacka, who gave us 1 star, who said, I get the feeling these guys make this podcast for themselves and to show how funny and smart they are, and it comes out far from it. And I think that's maybe the most accurate review we've ever had. So 1 star, but 5 stars for really nailing it, Crack a Black. All right, go Hoyas. Talk to you guys next week.
In love with my girlfriend, who consequently don't you see me boy band. So what time? But God, I know it's time to leave. And I'll nice girlfriend who consequently don't the same explain. So I think it's time to love a new wife and to a standing. So love a nice girlfriend who consequently don't the same explain. So I think it's time. God, I'm